It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
And good Monday morning to you. It is September 11th, 2017. And yes, we will be dealing with this all-important anniversary of what happened on 2001. Steve Bannon, former senior advisor to President Trump, kind of spills his guts in a weekend interview with Charlie Rose over at CBS. You're going to want to listen to some of that. But also, obviously, the key story this morning is Irma. Irma came ashore over the weekend in Florida. The good news this morning is that it is now down to a Cat 1 and expected in the next few hours to go to a tropical storm. But I tell you what, it had two landings in Florida. First, the Florida Keys, just as they predicted. I tell you what, it hit the Keys hard. I don't know how anybody who stayed around there is going to survive. We'll find out a little bit more about that. But then it came ashore again, up further on the West Coast. Now, you may remember, if you've had your TV off during the weekend, they were predicting go up the center, going up the kind of the eastern side for a while. Miami, yes, there's devastation there. They're without power. In fact, they're saying this morning almost 5 million people across the state of Florida without power this morning. It was more of, unlike Harvey, Harvey was a rain event, you know, 45, 50 inches of rain. Irma was more of a wind event. I think the maximum rainfall was about 11 inches. Now, that's a lot of rain, but nowhere near what we saw with Harvey. Death tolls this morning, 4-5 people have died in Florida because of this. We are thankful it's not more than that, but our hearts and prayers go out to families. Two of those five were first responders going out to try to help somebody out, and ended up taking their lives. As I say, going up the West Coast, it seems Naples was probably the hardest hit that we are seeing this morning, as the first reports coming out of Naples this morning. And it looks like a war zone. You know, I know in hurricanes, tornadoes, you get video footage of trailer parks, that sort of thing. But what they were showing this morning from Naples is just is total destructive nature of some of the spots in Naples. Sarasota Bay, you may have seen, it's the opposite effect of the surge. The surge is when these wall of water comes in on shore. But you may have seen in Sarasota Bay where the water was taken away. In fact, you saw pictures this morning of manatees kind of lying in the mud and people coming out to rescue them. So the opposite of the surge is when that storm draws water away from the shore. And so you have this incredible scene of basically, you know, Gulf waters gone. And as I say, manatees being rescued in that. It then moved on to Tampa. And certainly there are, you know, many thousands of people without power there this morning. And now it's moved on up the coast. As I say, now about a Category 1 in Georgia. They're getting ready for it there. In fact, we're going to hear this in a few moments. For the first time in history now, as Irma takes this path now towards the northwest out of Florida, for the first time in history, the city of Atlanta is facing a tropical storm warning. All right, it'll be a tropical storm by the time it gets to Atlanta, but a lot of wind, a lot of rain. You know, we tend to look at the the upper end of Irma, and I think at points when it first made landfall was about 150 mile per hour winds. But still, folks, if you're getting 50 and 60 mile an hour gusts, that is rather significant. So, you know, we just, our prayers have to continue to be for the dear folks in Florida. One other aspect of all of this, unfortunately, are the looters. Yes, in Miami, we understand that at this point at least 28 people have been arrested for looting. Now, were they going in to steal the necessities of life? No. They were going in to steal runners, sneakers. And at least 28 people have been arrested because of that. You know, just, you know, in human terms, it's like no mercy for these folks taking advantage of such a tragedy. All right, we want to bring you some of the reports that unfolded during the weekend so you can get a better flavor as Irma headed across Florida. And our first report comes from Brian Yanis, and let's hear about as the storm came ashore there in Miami.
We are in Coral Way, a neighborhood just like much of South Florida in complete darkness right now. Take a look at just some of the damage. Most of it is this, down trees, which is keeping people from getting on the roads, down power lines. If you can see from my light there, that is a traffic light and the power lines, a dangerous situation, which is why the curfew was from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. All around Florida, we got some, South Florida, we got some 90 to 100 mile an hour gusts yesterday, just proving that the power of Irma, despite her eye being 130 miles away, was really intense here. We had a 3-foot surge in Brickell Avenue in Miami Beach, flooding. Miami Beach not opening until Tuesday at noon. Miami Airport only doing limited flights starting on Tuesday. There's lots of down power lines, lots of down trees, and of course now the Miami-Dade and much of South Florida without power. And then if we continue to show you this, this is from the Panorama building in Brickell Avenue. We were there live when panels started falling off of the tallest building in Miami, an 85-story building, residential under construction, 6-foot panels flying off after the storm. Remember, it is the most dangerous part in which most people get hurt is after the storm. Think you're okay, but there is just tons of debris. The other concern, we've been seeing lots of police patrols in this neighborhood for looters. That's right, looters. We have video of looters at a Foot Locker in Miami. Unbelievable. People taking advantage of a really terrible situation down here. And then also we have the Miami Police Department even tweeting with a photo of looters. They have caught some 28 looters thus far, warning other looters that they're next if they continue. So that is the latest here in a very dark Miami-Dade County, and the restoration begins, guys.
So there you have it. That's a little flavor of the reporting that's gone on this weekend. And kudos to reporters both at Fox News and CNN. Watched a lot of those during the weekend, and they put themselves in danger. You know, so it's a credit to the profession of journalism. I know you can say, well, they're getting paid well and all of that sort of thing, but they're in a dangerous situation when you've heard that report there from Mr. Yanis talking about, you know, stuff falling. You know, in Miami especially, you've got all these high rises. And yes, they're away from the floods if you're up on the upper floors of those, but you've got plate glass that's falling out of some of these large buildings. And if you're down below, you're going to get hurt, if not killed, because of that. But also, and I was listening to an interview this morning with the mayor of Tampa, he's saying, people, stay in your house at the very least until the sun comes up, because people want to venture out. And if they're in a shelter somewhere, they want to get over to see what damage is done to their house. And you can understand that human emotion. But at the same time, there are power lines down everywhere. And as that report that you just heard, much of the human injury often happens after the hurricane has passed. Because people get out, as I say, in most of Florida, the flooding is not a big problem. It is the wind damage that's been caused. But you've got power lines down everywhere. Was watching a scene this morning where a bus Bus driver was out. I don't know why he was out, for what reason he was out. It was still dark out this morning. And he was removing a tree, a branch from underneath his bus. But there was a down power line very near where he was removing that palm tree branch. And so it was a street light that was down, laying on the ground beside him. And you don't know whether the electricity is still in those lines, folks. So it's a matter of using some common sense. Hey, listen, praise the Lord. If you made it through the storm, your house, your trailer, whatever the case may be, your apartment, you're safe in there. But the advice from the authorities right now is stay where you are. Just wait it out another several hours until authorities can get through and determine where those live electrical lines are. There is still some wind. You're now talking about in central Florida as it moves north. Still, as we want to mention, it may be a Cat 1, but those are still very strong winds. You want to be very careful as you move on up there. We're talking about Gainesville and now going into Georgia. And it's going to move on up through, as I say, the city of Atlanta. In fact, this morning's Fox News Janice Dean on what is to happen now. If you're in Georgia or parts of Alabama, maybe even to Tennessee, you're going to feel some effects over the next 48 hours, 72 hours or so from Irma. And Janice Dean of Fox News was talking about that this morning.
Okay, Irma is now Category 1 storm. Still packing a punch, though, and we saw winds yesterday in excess of 140 miles per hour. Those are wind gusts, but those are Category 4 force wind gusts. So Naples, Florida, 142 miles per hour. We are seeing devastation in Naples, Florida this morning. The radar now, the bulk of the highest concentration of winds is now moving through central and northern Florida. So Gainesville, you see the yellows and the oranges on your screen, Daytona Beach as well. That's where we have the core of those very strong hurricane force winds. Also, with the right front quadrant of the storm, we have seen tornado reports, dozens of them within the last 48 hours, and we still have a tornado watch in effect. We're going to continue to see ongoing tornado threats throughout the day today for North Florida, as well as Georgia, the Carolinas even, and in towards Tennessee and Kentucky. Storm reports, certainly we've heard of tornado damage in and around the Miami area, and that storm damage is going to potentially continue. There's the future radar. By the way, we have the first ever tropical storm warning for the Atlanta, Georgia area. That has never happened in meteorological history.
Well, there you have it, Irma, and it's still making its move, and that is incredible. If you do any flying in this country, especially with Delta Airlines and that storm going through Atlanta, you may want to check with your airline this morning. That'll definitely have an impact on Atlanta. And one of the major hubs, I'm not sure it's between, I think Chicago and Atlanta, busiest airport in the world as far as landings and takeoffs go. So Irma is going to be felt for several days to come. And as that report from Janice Dean just mentioned, you know, you feel you may have survived the front end of Irma, but along come the tornado damage on the strong wind side of Irma. So, Irma, we are thankful. The loss of life has been quite small, but the devastation very strong in Florida, and she's not through yet. And we'll continue to cover that here at American Family Radio. All right, when we come back, this is September the 11th. It is the anniversary of 2001 and that terrorist attack that we will never forget, hopefully never forget. We'll be talking more about that when we come back. You're listening to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy. We're back right after this break.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Jesus can sympathize with our weaknesses because he's been through it all. When you say, "Sometimes I'm afraid and lonely," he says, "I know, I've been there." When you're tired, he understands because he was tired too. When your friends have abandoned you, he's experienced that. When you look at death and it scares the spit out of you, he knows what that's like. You see, Jesus didn't come to keep you from being afraid and lonely and hurt. He came to be afraid, lonely, and hurt just like you. He didn't die just to keep you from dying, but to die as you must die. I don't know about you, but for me, that helps. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Have you ever wondered what would have happened to America if Bernie Sanders had been elected president, an avowed socialist lording over the fruited plain? Well, look no further than Venezuela, a socialist paradise where there are no jobs. They've run out of toilet paper, and now people are so hungry they're eating animals from the local zoo. The Chicago Tribune reports citizens are snatching horses, pigs, birds, and buffalo from their cages. To make matters even worse, it took zookeepers quite a while before they realized what was going on. Hey, what happened to the zebra? That would have been the United States if Bernie Sanders had been elected president. Could you imagine the scene outside the Bronx Zoo? People lined up like a fast food restaurant. Yes, I'd like a two-piece gazelle, dark meat with coleslaw and a biscuit. Sweet mercy, America. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
President Trump talking about Irma on the weekend, and certainly his thoughts and prayers. He said his family going out for the folks in Florida, and he did say, yes, that he'll be traveling down to Florida sometime during this week, just as he did going to Texas in the wake of Hurricane Harvey there. And we don't want to forget about our good friends in Texas. They still have a long, long way to go. Many of those communities along that coastline and certainly in parts of the city of Houston, they've got a long way to go in their recovery. So we cannot let ourselves forget about the devastation there. And as we were talking about earlier, it was mostly due to the flooding in that part, 45, 50 inches. You just can't imagine that kind of... And so, you know, we want to be praying for our National Guard people, FEMA people. They're already overtaxed with regards to what's going on with Harvey. And now they must deal with what's going on in Florida. And they say parts of Florida with the power outages there, it may be weeks before they're able to restore there. So As I say, our thoughts and prayers this morning have to be, continue to be with the dear folks there in southern Texas, but also now certainly with Florida, where, as we have been saying, the danger is not over yet. It is now down, Irma's down to a Category 1, but that's still very strong winds. Possibilities of tornadoes as it moves on up now into Georgia, parts of South Carolina, and then eventually perhaps catching a bit of Alabama, and then on up into could be Kentucky and Tennessee, so depending on how things go. Just be prepared. This story of Irma is going to continue throughout the week. Well, as we have mentioned, another important event today is the anniversary of 9/11, 16 years ago. And I remember, and this question is going to be asked a lot of people, where were you 16 years ago this morning? Well, I remember being in the newsroom here at American Family Radio. It was a beautiful day where we're located here in northern Mississippi. In fact, it was a beautiful day in New York City. And I remember walking into one of our studios. We have a TV on, and there was that first report. In fact, I have the Associated Press bulletin still in my office, reports of a plane flying into the Twin Towers. And initially, I guess like a lot of people, that first plane, you thought, okay, my goodness, this is horrible. This plane obviously lost power, and it had nowhere to go, and it's flown in. And then there was this realization when the second plane hit the Twin Towers that, no, this is not an accident. We are under attack. And, of course, you remember that scene, President Bush at the time. He was speaking to a bunch of little kids down in Florida. And you remember one of his senior advisors coming to the stage and whispering in his ear of what had happened in New York. And that look on his face, President Bush's face, when he realized that we were under attack by terrorists. It was an incredible day. Thousands are gathering in New York this morning at this very hour to commemorate it. But I want to take you back once again. Again, it's like we've talked about Harvey, like we've talked about Irma. You know, those of us who haven't gone through that, it's easy for us to forget. And it's also easy, I think, 16 years later to forget that initial attack that cost the lives of some 3,000 people there in New York in those Twin Towers. So I want to take you back there. This is the CNN initial report on the morning of September 11th, 2001.
Justin, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. CNN Center right now is just beginning to work on this story, obviously calling our sources and trying to figure out exactly what happened, but clearly something relatively devastating happening this morning there on the south end of the island of Manhattan.
Something devastating has happened, and again, unconfirmed report that a plane has crashed into one of the towers there. We are efforting more information on this subject as it becomes available to you. Sean, you're on the air right now. Go ahead. What can you tell us?
I just witnessed a plane that appeared to be cruising slightly lower than normal altitude over New York City, and it appears to have crashed into, I don't know which tower it is, but it hit directly in the middle of one of the World Trade Center towers.
Sean, what kind of plane? Was it a small plane, a jet?
It was a jet. Looked like a two-engine jet, maybe a 737.
You're talking about a large passenger commercial jet. And where were you when you saw this?
I am on the 21st floor of 5 Penn Plaza.
Did it appear that the plane was having any difficulty flying?
Yes, it did. It was teetering back and forth, wingtip to wingtip, and it looks like it has crashed into probably 20 stories from the top of the World Trade Center, maybe the 80th to 85th floor. There's smoke billowing out of the World Trade Center.
Wow. And of course, at that point, as I mentioned, a lot of people thought it was just an accident. And of course, what we were quickly made informed of was that it was a whole lot more than an accident. Didn't take too long, especially after the second plane. Rob Gardner is one of our producers. Rob, you remember?
I do very well. I was a producer director at a local TV station, and I was running the board, running cut-ins, we called it, and sitting there watching this happen. And the first one, like you said, it was like, this is incredible, you know, just a terrible accident. And then all of a sudden I looked and you could see the plane, the second one coming from the background and into the – and I said, that plane's coming too. Mm. And we're all gathered around the monitor, you know, and we're going, this is – no, you know, it was just a – it was heart-wrenching and very disturbing.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what we were introduced to that day was the fact that Islamic terrorism wasn't going to isolate itself to the Middle East. I think most Americans felt prior to that event in 2001 that the war on terrorism was taking place over there.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to worry about it here. But, you know, the reality struck, and as we learned the story of these terrorists who had come to this nation, and some of them at least at a flying school in Florida had special visas to come in, it was extremely well planned. You will remember the flights, both flights originated in Boston, I believe it was. But these guys boarded their planes up in Portland, Maine, because security was fairly lax mm-hmm. there. And so they knew what they were doing. Those were the days long before what you face now at TSA when you're going through an airport. They knew security was lax at that little airport in Portland, Maine. And, of course, they took that flight down to Boston. And they were already checked through security there, so they didn't have to worry. But they got on those planes. I think one was bound for Los Angeles, and I forget what the other one was. And they very quickly, after takeoff from Boston, took control. Mm-hmm. Those were the days before we had those cabin doors that they're in place now of the cockpit where you can't get in. They locked it, the metal doors now that they put on all these airplanes. But they were able to overcome the flight attendants and then overcome the pilots in the cockpits. Boy, since then, what we have learned about Islamic terrorism, and we've had so many attacks in this country, Islamic terrorism, call it what it is. Of course, you will remember both during the Bush years and Barack Obama's years as president, a hesitation to even call it that. Don't want to offend Muslims. And, you know, that continued. I think of the massacre at Fort Hood at the hand of an Islamic terrorist who was a member of our military. And I remember the investigation that took place, the congressional investigation that took place after Fort Hood. There were all kinds of warning signs that Major Hassan was a terrorist sympathizer. And yes, he was a major. But they allowed him to continue on. They didn't stop him. And then, of course, we've had Boston since then. We've had recruiting centers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and on it goes. There was even a note of optimism back in 2011 when we had that team of Navy SEALs go in and took out, I think it was Rob O'Neill was the shooter. With that team. He's now a frequent contributor on Fox News, and he was recounting this morning, he was interviewed from New York, that moment when he entered that compound in Pakistan and what he did. And he said he shot, I think, three times. Osama bin Laden was standing, shot him three times, killed him. And he said at that moment he was in shock himself, but he realized later that he had done a deed that needed to be done and in response and to what happened, of course, in New York. Because Osama bin Laden, you may remember, was celebrating the night of 9/11, 2001. He was celebrating with his friends as to what had been accomplished. So the war against Islamic terrorism, here we are 16 years later, and it continues. We're fighting the battle. Most of us, you know, we're in Iraq dealing with ISIS. We're in Afghanistan dealing with terrorism there. You've got places like Uganda, Nigeria, Boko Haram. Folks, it's all the same mentality. And the battle is continuing. Steve Jordahl, one of our reporters, has a story this morning. You will remember in the wake of 9/11, there were mass prayer services. And all over the nation, some people thought, well, this is going to make it this, you know, this is turning our eyes towards God finally and understanding that we need God in this country. We need his protection. But that didn't last very long because what happened, political correctness took over too. And almost immediately it was this condemnation of anyone who put those two words together, Islamic terrorism. And so we're still living that today. Today, as I say, right about now, we're about 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This was the time it was happening, back 16 years ago. And we've just been watching some of the video again on Fox News of those two planes flying in. The impact, 3,000 lives lost. You've got the children of those individuals, the first responders who lost their lives. And all of that, we can't forget also, obviously, the plane that was flown into the Pentagon. And there was one more. Some believe that that plane with terrorists was probably aiming for the White House itself. Some of the passengers got through, and that plane ended up in a farm field in Pennsylvania, I believe it was, somewhere. So, a day we need to remember, in the midst of everything else that's going on with Irma, but in the midst of all of that, we need to remember what happened on 9/11. And this country must remain vigilant because I believe most people believe that Islamic terrorism is not through with the West. It still regards the United States as the enemy. And they will do everything possible that they can. There are terrorists, Islamic terrorists. We have seen it again. You saw it down in Miami at that club. Was it Miami or Orlando? I think it was. Orlando, was it? Yeah. So we're not through with it yet. It's an ongoing battle. And along with fighting the terrorists, we're still fighting this mentality that it's really a peaceful religion and there's just a few bad guys in there. Even if that is true, if they say just 10% of the world's Muslims are terrorists, there are roughly 2 billion Muslims in the world right now. You're talking about even 10%. It's 200 million, if my math is correct. That's a lot of people that you have to be aware of. You can just look to Israel, folks. They're dealing with Islamic terrorism every day on their doorstep. Israel many times condemned for the wall that it's built around its citizens to try to protect them. We've dealt before in many stories with Palestinian terrorists. As a demonstration of that Islamic terrorism mentality in the West Bank where the Palestinians are, they continue to honor terrorists who kill innocent Israeli citizens, name streets after them. They take money that's given to the Palestinians from the United States. They take money to take care of the families of terrorists in honor of those families. So on and on it goes. Yes, it is 16 years since 9/11, but the war against Islamic terrorism is not through. You're listening to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy today. When we come back, we're going to be talking about an event coming up a little later this month in Springfield, Virginia. The Prince of Peace Lutheran Church is going to be involved with a pro-life prayer time, and we'll be talking to one of the organizers when we come back.
Let the children come to me. Do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of God. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Tensions spiked in a Sacramento suburb over a boy who purportedly transitioned to a girl at Rockland Academy Gateway's kindergarten. Parents were enraged because they weren't forewarned that their 5 and 6-year-olds would be taught transgenderism and that a full-blown transition reveal would occur in class. When parents asked the teacher to disclose what exactly was taught during the reveal lesson, the teacher refused, and the school board supported the teacher's decision. At Rockland, the school is the final authority.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Friendships is an all-volunteer ministry helping the needy in the U.S. and abroad. There's an opportunity for you to care for Syrian war victims at Friendships Medical Field Clinic and Base in the Golan Heights. Among the positions available are doctors, nurses, dentists, interpreters, as well as personnel for operating the facility. For details, visit friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. Again, 337-433-5022.
Dove of Dove Soap. They released an ad with a transgender mother as part of its new Real Moms campaign celebrating motherhood. Now, I hate to point out the obvious here.
Janet Mefford.
But a guy can't be a mother. I don't care if you wear a wig and put on a dress and talk in a high voice and put on makeup. It doesn't make you a woman to be a man being a woman who isn't really a woman. You can't conceive a baby with two women. This is just madness. Join me for Janet Mefford Live, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Sometimes we get so tired we just lose hope.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Hope in life itself. A guy named Elijah experienced that kind of bone-crushing tiredness. He'd been in conflict with a political leader and his wife. In fact, the conflict was so bad that Elijah gave up hope for life itself. In the midst of all that, he sensed a small voice talking to him saying, "There are people who share your same values and feel the same way you do, and I know who they are." In other words, don't lose hope. Jesus still does that today. As we tell him about our seemingly impossible situations in which there is no hope, he can still speak to us with a small voice giving perspective and hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Suddenly, the talk of the town in Republican-controlled official Washington is Chuck and Nancy. With that chummy reference to the Senate and House Democratic leaders, President Trump sent a powerful shot across the bow of their GOP counterparts, Mitch and Paul. Mr. Trump took this step as a new national opinion survey found that 63% of those polled want Senator McConnell and Speaker Ryan replaced. The president justified his short-term deficit and budget deal with the Democrats as a means of obtaining a defense spending increase at a time when the prospect of deadly international conflicts seems to be growing by the day. The McLaughlin poll showed, though, that both congressional Republicans and President Trump are in political danger if they abandon the platform they ran on in 2016 and the voters who were persuaded by it to put them in charge. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And we are back to Sandy Rios in the Morning on this Monday, September 11th, 2017. Been obviously dealing a lot this morning with Irma, who continues to make herself known in Florida. It's down to a Category 1 now, hurricane, expected to continue to weaken, but has left a path of devastations, particularly along the west coast of Florida, after hitting in the Keys, on up through Naples. Naples particularly on the west coast, hard hit. Tampa's not as bad as they thought it would be, but still many dangers up along Jacksonville on the east coast. As that side of the storm hits there, tornadoes, loss of life. At last report we had 5 people so far, 2 of them first responders down in the Miami area. But now, Irma, Expected to weaken to a tropical storm a little bit later today. But still, as we have mentioned many times, very strong winds. There's still danger, still tornadoes possible as Irma moves on up through Georgia now. In fact, as we have mentioned, for the first time in history, Atlanta now facing a tropical storm warning as it's expected to move through there in the next 24 to 48 hours. And then the Carolinas, parts of South Carolina, and on up through Tennessee, perhaps, and Alabama. So Irma is not going to die quietly. She's going to continue. Again, tropical storm strength winds. We've also been talking about 9/11. This is the 16th anniversary of the Islamic terrorism attacks here in the United States. In fact, as we're speaking right now, President Trump and his wife Melania stepping out at the White House for a moment of remembrance of 9/11, when more than 3,000 people lost their lives on that day. Well, something else that is an ongoing battle, and that is remembering the importance of life. And there's an event coming up in Virginia at the end of this month, September 30th, and it is an event, the Reformation 500 Years of Life Issues, the Nova Life Conference. And one of the organizers for this September 30th event is Carl Cecil, and he's organizing Lutherans for Life there in Virginia at the end of September, and he joins us on the line right now. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Fred. How are you?
Not too bad at all. And this is the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We always have to be distinguish that. So tell us a bit about this event, what is going to happen there, and what is the driving force behind this?
Great. Well, thank you very much. Well, the Lutherans for Life are a gospel-motivated and we're working with the gospel to talk about life. And what we're doing, though, is hosting this wonderful conference with some amazing speakers at the end of the month, as you mentioned. And the driving force behind this is just our desire to provide ways for the local folks here in the D.C. area to come and hear how they can make a difference. Many of our speakers will talk about how they can actually get involved. I know, you know, many folks wonder how can they make a difference. In fact, Congressman Shimka will not be able to join us, but will be available via video, has given, and I've had a preview of what he's going to be speaking, and one of the things he mentioned is running for Congress. So it's going to be an exciting time, and it's on September 30th, as you mentioned, at the Prince of Peace Lutheran Church.
Yeah. Our own Sandy Rios is going to be speaking to the event, I understand.
She is. She is the keynote speaker, so to speak. Certainly, you know, one of the most pro-life speakers that I'm aware of. We also have some other incredible folks that are going to be joining her, to include Carol Tobias, who's the president of the National Right to Life. We also have Molly Hemingway, who you may have seen on Fox News a few times, who's with the Federalist Papers. We have the National Executive Director for Lutherans for Life, Reverend Salamink, as well as Delegate Bob Marshall, who's one of our local pro-life advocates. And we also have a Dr. Marie Anderson from one of the very pro-life OBGYN clinics. In addition to our own president, John Denninger, who's the local district president of our Missouri Synod. And again, you mentioned we are a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod organization and very pro-life, and it's very exciting to be a part of this exciting organization.
Carl, tell us, you know, we've been talking about 9/11, and we're 16 years by that, and many people, it's very easy to forget events. And I wonder sometimes when it comes to the pro-life issue, people recognize what abortion is. But I wonder sometimes if our hearts become hardened to the efforts to overturn Roe v. Wade and to make sure that the pro-life movement and what it stands for remains at the forefront of people's minds.
Well, thank you, Fred. Clearly, keeping the the once a year March 5th is outstanding, and it really puts it in front of the national leaders. But conferences like this one help local folks to get involved and really understand the issues. And quite honestly, as I see the, if you will, the battle that's been going on, we're winning in terms of when you start seeing the science that's proving we've said all along that that life begins at conception, and abortion is the sure to stop a beating heart. And we're just excited about providing this information to the D.C. Metro so they'll be able to share this with their fellow Christians. And the type of folks that we're expecting to come here are people who care about life, whether it's at the beginning or all the way at the end. And that's really what life is about, the sanctity. It's something that God has given us, and we as humans don't have the right to take it away.
We've done stories here at American Family News about a sign of optimism is that young people, and perhaps it is with the advancements in science, that we are now able to carry out surgery on the babies in the womb to correct physical problems, that sort of thing. But amongst young people, millennials, there is a strong movement in the pro-life direction.
You are absolutely right. In fact, I just was, this morning contacting our local George Mason University Students for Life because they're such an important component of this movement, as well as many of the high schools. In fact, my daughter's got a Students for Life organization at her school in Fredericksburg. I know that many of these schools, and we're certainly reaching out to the young people just to make them aware of the importance of life, because, if we don't care about life, what do we care about? And certainly, God has given us this precious thing, and we must honor it.
All right, we've been speaking with Carl Cecil. He is organizing the Lutherans for Life event. Tell us where and when again that this event is going to occur.
Great, thank you very much. So on the 30th of September at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church, that's in Springfield, very easy to get to right up Old King Mill Road. But more importantly, we need you to register by the 28th at www.popplc.org/NovaFL Conference. That's NovaFL Conference. Or if you just have questions, send me an email at lfl@popplc.org, and we'll get you the information. We do need folks to register by the 28th, and the cost is from zero to free will. So, we're having an exciting conference. We're having these great speakers that are really going to bring this event, to life and really make it invite people to be a part of this movement.
All right, Carl Cecil, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm sure Sandy will be talking more about this event as it gets closer to September the
30th. We're very excited. Thank you very much.
All right, Carl, thank you very much. And once again, that email, in case you missed it, is lfl@popplc.org. All right. And as I say, I think Sandy, obviously, she's going to be the keynote speaker there. We'll certainly be talking about that as we get a little closer to September 30th, that event at the Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Springfield, Virginia. All right. One other news story to deal with. From the weekend, Steve Bannon, controversial figure, one of the senior advisors in the early days of President Trump's administration, decided to talk this weekend, and talk he did about life inside the White House, and boy, he did not hold back at all. You may remember back a couple of weeks ago, he left the White House / fired from the administration. Not clear where that line was drawn, but Steve Bannon over the weekend was a guest on CBS. Charlie Rose interviewed there, And I want to play you a little bit of that interview. Among other things, Steve Bannon talks about the fight that President Trump faces, not so much with Democrats, but from the GOP establishment.
The Republican establishment is trying to nullify the 2016 election. That's a brutal fact we have to face.
The Republican establishment.
The Republican establishment.
Wants to nullify the 2016 election.
Trying to nullify the 2016 election. All absolutely.
Right. Who?
I think Mitch McConnell and to a degree Paul Ryan. They do not want Donald Trump's populist, economic, nationalist agenda to be implemented. It's very obvious. It's obvious as night follows day.
Give me a story that illustrates that.
Well, Mitch McConnell, when we first met him, I mean, he said, I think, in one of the first meetings in Trump Tower with the president, as we're wrapping up, he basically says, I don't want to hear any more of this drain the swamp talk. Flat out. He goes, a guy up on Capitol Hill can't buy a Coke unless it's got to be reported. He says, I can't hire any smart people because everybody's all over him for reporting requirements and the pay, et cetera, and the scrutiny. You know, you got to back off that. The drain the swamp thing was Mitch McConnell was day one, did not want to go there, wanted us to back off.
You are attacking on many fronts people who you need to help you to get things done.
They're not going to help you unless they're put on notice. They're going to be held accountable if they do not support the President of the United States. Right now, there's no accountability. They do not support the president's program. It's an open secret on Capitol Hill. Everybody in the city knows it.
And so, therefore, now that you're out of the White House, you go into war with them.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what Steve Bannon said he would do. I remember that. I think it was a Friday when the announcement was made that Steve Bannon was leaving the White House, that he was going to go out, and he felt he could do more outside the White House fighting for President Trump than he could inside. I found that fascinating, his comment there. You just heard it. Mitch McConnell saying, I don't want any more talk about draining the swamp. Well, there you have it, folks. You know, I think Steve Bannon is exactly right that President Trump is going to face his strongest opposition, has been facing his strongest opposition from inside the Republican Party. Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and others who just love the status quo. They got their friends in the Democratic Party. And, you know, we just don't want to keep on. You know, things are cool. We're okay if we lose elections as long as, of course, we win. And we continue to collect our salary. We're okay with all of that. Just their message to President Trump, stop rocking the boat. We don't want that. So that's what the president is facing. That may go to what happened last week. You may remember President Trump siding with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Another interesting thing, and this will be reported today. In fact, you can find it on One News Now, that Steve Bannon said the firing of FBI Director James Comey may have been the biggest mistake in modern political history. And basically, he says, of course, it's led to the whole investigation by special counsel Robert Mueller. So that's kind of interesting. As I say, that story is on onenewsnow.com. So as we wrap up today, this September 11th, 2017, continue our prayers for dear folks in Florida still experiencing Irma, and also remember the survivors of all those who died on this date 16 years ago. It's been my pleasure, Fred Jackson, to sit in for Sandy Rios this morning. And Lord willing, we'll be back again perhaps tomorrow. And until then, God bless. Stay tuned for much more great programming here at American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.